Highbridge, a division of Recorded Books, presents Captain Moxley and the Embers of the Empire by Dan Hanks. Read by Danielle Cohen. Prologue. Normandy, 1945. The troop of British soldiers sat around the fire, nestled safely in the grassy dunes of the beach. Their laughing was undercut by the lapping of waves against the nearby shore and the whip of a harsh wind overhead, threatening an extended winter. In the distance, headlights split the darkness of the forest to the east. Twin sealed beams, the best that money could buy, or at least that's what Lieutenant Jeffreys figured was still the case back in the real world. He'd been over here in this wet, shitty place fighting the Nazis for over a year now. Who knew what kind of technologies were changing the car industry back home? Likely giving his grandfather even more reason to spit and curse as he sweat his days away in their family's East End London garage. If the bloody garage was still there, of course, and the Luftwaffe bastards hadn't wiped it from the face of the earth. The car grew closer. It wasn't long before Jeffreys could make out the distinct shape of a Hudson Commodore, crouched low like a bullet skimming the ground. Military, perhaps? That was his first thought. But it was one unsettled by a feeling he couldn't quite put his finger on. The car pulled up close to the dunes, and four figures emerged. Suits, not uniforms. Two up front, tall and thin, like bankers or businessmen. Two behind, like Goliaths, so large they'd been veritably poured into their shirts until their buttons were ready to burst. Each appeared to be carrying at least one sidearm. Not military, Jeffreys decided. Government. So then, I turn around, and they're all dead. I mean, all of them. Bits of Nazis everywhere, like bloody confetti after the world's worst wedding. I'd barely blinked, man, and she'd destroyed them all. To his left, the stocky, balding Peterson shook his head, lost deep in the memories of the scene he was replaying for the boys. He blew out his cheeks and ran a hand through the remnants of his greasy hair. Jeffreys knew what his friend was picturing in his head. He hadn't been able to shake the images of those bullet-ridden bodies for weeks. But such was his life now, and the fact that he and his troops were able to tell these stories meant that they weren't one of the bodies lying in tatters on the floor. A definite plus. Stocks McGill cackled like a hyena into the night. "That's nothing, Peterson, you pussy. You haven't been here since the beginning. You don't know what she did after she discovered her own bloody Air Force gave her up for dead. A compound of flesh confetti is nothing compared to the shit she pulled last year down at..." His pale, pockmarked grin stopped short. He'd seen the Stooges arrive. "Government," Peterson muttered, instinctively reaching for his rifle propped against the log he'd been sitting on. "Soiling their shoes on enemy turf," Stocks hissed quietly. "I don't think so." The inappropriately named Duke, all badly fitting clothes and as ugly as sin, got to his feet and gazed nervously between his best friend Stocks and the approaching men.
"It's like I keep telling you. Haven't you heard the stories? Some kind of secret agency is over here, hunting treasure or some shit, racing the Germans for it. That's what they're saying."
His ragged voice tailed off as the visitors reached the bonfire. Jeffreys watched as the three suited figures spread out around them, before the fourth, chiselled face lurking behind horn-rimmed glasses, stepped forward to address them.
"Good evening, gentlemen."
Clearly American, with a slight southern lilt. His voice quiet but firm enough to mark him as the leader of his little band. The man took his grey fedora off, revealing neatly trimmed hair, and ran a careful hand through it.
definitely government. Nobody else in this bloody war gave a shit about how their hair looked. Peterson and Jeffries glanced at each other. Then Peterson stepped forward, keeping the rifle handy at his side. "Can we help you, sir?" The government official seemed satisfied by the formality. He nodded and flashed a badge on the inside of his made-to-measure jacket. "You can call me Agent Taylor, son, and, as it happens, I'm looking for someone." Stocks laughed nervously and punched Duke in the arm. "We're all looking for someone, ain't that right, Duke? Keep us warm on these cold French nights." He sniffed. "Ain't that easy to find round here, though." "Speak for yourself," drawled Simpkins from where he was lying back against the giant log, digging his feet further into the sand beside his treasured cowboy boots. He pointed his cigarette in the air towards the distant hills inland, every bit the lazy cowboy he had idolized throughout his childhood in Manchester. "Why, only last night I found myself a quaint old farmer's daughter in the town up there on the..." "Stop." The smile had faded from Agent Taylor's face. "I'd rather not have the graphic details of what you boys get up to when you're not slaughtering the enemy, if you don't mind. The person I need was last reported working with a group of wayward soldiers such as yours." His hair hadn't moved a jot, despite the wind, yet he ran his fingers through it again before replacing his fedora. "Captain Sam Marksley is the pilot's name. Reported missing, presumed dead, by the RAF 2 years ago, but alleged to have been fighting on the continent with the French Resistance and other parties ever since. Causing some havoc for our Nazi friends, too, from everything we've seen and heard." His eyes roamed the troop looking for an inn. "Did you know the enemy has taken a bounty out on the dear captain, boys? Impressive sum of money, too. All of which means that he's now become a person of significant interest for the American government. It's imperative we speak with him quickly, if you please." Jeffries knew Peterson had turned to look at him for guidance, but he kept his eyes on the agent. Nazi friends. The turn of phrase made him want to spit. Nobody who had been here fighting the bastards, who knew what they were capable of, would have used those two words together. Ever. He glanced around, quickly weighing up the hierarchy of control on their little patch of beach. Did American government agencies have jurisdiction over them here? Exactly how much did they have to help these men? If it came to a fight, who would win? Agent Taylor must have read his thoughts. His hand moved to his hip and pulled back his jacket, just enough to show that he was armed too. "Let's cut to the chase," he said. "I've got no issue with you and your men, and in fact, I've enjoyed your work. Hell, we all have back home, boys. But right now, I don't have time to argue the point. So I'm afraid I'm gonna have to make this go a little quicker." He raised his hand, and the three other agents immediately reached into their jackets. Jeffries stepped back, but realized he was too far from his rifle to get it in time. The others in the group were similarly blindsided. Only Peterson was able to lift his weapon and train it on Agent Taylor. At the exact moment, they all realized the agents were not reaching for guns, but rather for cartons of cigarettes, packets of chocolate, and other luxury items the men hadn't seen in forever. "Let's call it a reward for being such helpful chaps," Agent Taylor said, with a hint of a smile as he watched the soldiers react to the stack of goods being piled onto a log at the base of one of the dunes. There was instantly a flood of saliva filling Jeffrey's mouth as he imagined tearing back the wax paper on one of those smooth, dark slabs of Fry's chocolate and taking a bite.
"Reward, bribe, whatever it's called, I'm up for it,"
Stocks said. He didn't even wait for the agents to finish stacking up the goods. He dove straight in, grabbed two tins of condensed milk, and pointed over his shoulder. "The captain is over that dune, down by the water. Has been for the last 2 hours, in fact. Not one for company tonight. But I'm sure he would just love to have a chinwag with you Yank fellas." Duke stifled a laugh. Even Peterson twitched. But neither of them said a word to correct Stocks. Agent Taylor tipped his hat. "Then I shall go and speak with him." Without further ado, he led his men towards the beach. Behind him, 6 of the 8 soldiers started divvying up the goods they'd just been offered.
"Should we tell them?"
Jeffries asked quietly, as Peterson joined him, watching the Americans in their fancy black shoes trudge through the sandy dunes.
"Nah," Peterson replied. "Not our fault their intel is shite. Let them discover Captain Samantha Moxley for themselves."
Chapter 1. Lady Liberty. New York, 1952.
Shards of moonlight cut through broken windows, bathing the hidden warehouse beneath the Statue of Liberty in an eerie glow. Rows of wooden boxes marked "Authorized Personnel Only" filled the shadowy interior. Crates in their hundreds stacked from the cold tiled floor to the ceiling. All neatly arranged. All quietly waiting for their turn to be shipped off-site to destinations as yet unknown. All except the crate that suddenly exploded into splinters of pine. A man burst through it headfirst and fell to the floor in a bloody heap, his once immaculate grey suit in tatters. His fedora rolled to a stop in front of him.
"I already told you,"
he muttered, blindly searching the floor for something. His hat? A gun? Whatever it was, he didn't find it in time. A dusty brown boot connected with his stomach. He doubled over again, coughing and wheezing like the last gasp of a spitfire running out of fuel. He had to spit the final few words out, along with several globs of blood.
"I don't know where she is."
The figure standing over him paused for the briefest of seconds, head tilted as though contemplating the merciful option. Then Captain Samantha Moxley stepped into the light and kicked the man in the face.
"I don't believe him."
He began to crawl his way back across the chipped black and white tiles, leaving a bloody smear in his wake.
"Why would I?"
She began to follow slowly, keeping a deliberate distance between them, enough to make him expect another attack, enough not to be caught by a trick up his sleeve.
"I know what lies he's been trained to tell me, how to manoeuvre the conversation around until I'm not sure what's up and what's down, how to make me doubt what I know to be true. He and his friends are masters of spin and bullshit, twisting perceptions to suit their agenda."
Reaching a stack of crates, the man pulled himself until he was sat up. He looked tired and beaten. She knew how that felt.
"I know, because I used to be just like him."
He coughed, and more blood splattered his shirt. Yet a surprising sound issued forth from his broken mouth now, filling the cavernous warehouse with an exhalation of pain and laughter. Had she broken him already? Cracked his facade? Well, that hadn't taken long at all. He smiled through shattered teeth, knowing his guise of innocence wasn't going to delay the inevitable any longer. Sam put a boot on his shinbone and crouched down, taking care to dig her heel in just enough to make him realise she could break him further. Her fingers reached out for his tie and straightened it. Then she slipped the knot right up to his windpipe and leaned in close.
"Last chance, Agent. Tell me where she is and I might just let you live."
He gave a whispered laugh.
"It no longer matters. You'll never reach your sister in time. The 9 are not to be refused. You know that. I guess you should have done what we wanted when you had the chance.
Sam nodded and let the cheap charcoal tie fall to his chest.
So should you, she said.
She reached into her pocket for the silver disc she always carried in case of emergencies, an experimental piece of weaponry that she'd been given when she used to work alongside people like this. About the size of a dollar coin, small and unthreatening. Unless you knew what it did. The man's eyes widened as he saw it. His lips started protesting weakly, but she didn't hear him now. Her boot held down his chest and she bent down to slam the gadget onto his exposed neck. There was a sharp thwack as the hooks on the back fixed tightly to his skin. She pressed the button in the center. 5. He grasped for the disc, but she punched him in the face, hard enough to buy her time to rifle through his suit pockets. 4. Her fingers found a folded piece of paper. She pulled it out quickly and glanced at what it said as he groggily struggled beneath her. 3. Yep, this was it, exactly what she had come here to find. 2. Best of luck, she said. I believe you'll need it. 1. She lifted her boot, just as a shimmer of purpley black light silhouetted the man, and pulled him screaming into another dimension. The heavy metal door to the warehouse slammed shut as Sam strode into the cool October night beneath Lady Liberty herself. The young pilot who had been waiting for her, no more than 18 or so, with grease smudged across his white, freckled cheeks, was doing his best to appear casual as he leaned on the railing and stared out at the city lights beyond. He dropped his barely smoked cigarette, scuffed it underfoot in a scatter of autumn leaves, and raced over.
"What's with all that screaming in there?" Charlie asked. "Sounded like a fella. You okay, miss?"
His boyish face, half hidden beneath an oversized cap, showed genuine concern as he handed back her brown pilot's jacket and battered Smith and Wesson Victory. Sam holstered the revolver and slipped into the jacket, trying to hide her wry amusement as she discreetly pocketed the flyer she'd just retrieved.
"I'm fine, thank you, Charlie," she said. "And don't worry, there won't be any more screaming from that gentleman for a while. I've just packed him off on a small trip. We all set?"
Yeah. Good to go whenever you are."
His gaze wandered across the bloody smears on her ripped shirt and his head tilted.
"You can tell me to get lost, because this might not be any of my business. But you know the war's over, right?"
"If only that were so," she sighed. The concept of there being peace in our time wasn't one that had borne much fruit in her life. She'd left the battlefields of Europe only to find herself in a war of a different kind. And now this. Wasn't this America? What happened to that quintessential American dream of finding a quiet part of the world to call her own, free from being knee-deep in other people's shit? She started walking towards their transportation. A Grumman UF-2G seaplane, bobbing gently on the choppy waves of the bay as it clung to its mooring on one of the long timber docks. Ex-Coast Guard and apparently ex-military, given its faded Stars and Stripes insignia on the fuselage. It had been liberated for the night by Charlie from where it was usually locked up in his dad's Bronx marina. Not the sleekest or fastest bird in the sky, but Sam couldn't help but fall in love a little bit with its homely, no-nonsense design. A great way to get about New York City if you had some cash to part with and were in a hurry. Which, tonight, it turned out she was. Charlie jogged to keep up.
"Hey, whatever, Miss Moxley. I didn't mean nothing by it. It's like I always say, the customer's got reasons and nobody needs to know about them but them. By my reckoning, you've still got a few dollars left to burn tonight. You wanna take in a Broadway show? Or how about a flick? My sister said that new all-singing, all-dancing one with that fella, Gene Kelly, is pretty gangbusters. Although she'd probably go watch him do anything, she's that mad in love with him."
He looked up at her earnestly. Seriously, I can take you any place you like. So, where do you want to go? Sam glanced to where the sprawl of city lights in Lower Manhattan twinkled and danced in the distance. Back, kid. By my reckoning, about 10,000 years. His face was the picture of confusion, but she didn't have time to elaborate further, because at that moment a shadowy break cut through the illuminations reflected in the bay. A boat, full of armed figures, heading straight for them. And it seems I'm not the only one, she added, grabbing Charlie's arm. Come on, best foot forward. They heard the yelling over the hum of the boat's engine before the gunfire started. Then a hail of bullets pinged off the granite walls and the ground around them, and even though she knew the men were too late and too far behind to be precise, no matter how many times in the past she'd tried to instill in them a sense of instinct, there was every chance their angry, scattergun approach could still take one or both of them down. A bullet in the shoulder, in the leg, a lucky ricochet. That would end her rescue attempt real quick. Go, go! She yelled above the din and thrust the young pilot towards the seaplane. She quickly untied the mooring and jumped in after him, slamming the door behind her. Who the hell are those guys? Charlie flinched as bullets started pinging off the metal shell, and he attempted to strap himself into the pilot's seat. For a second, Sam considered letting him, but he was fumbling his belt. She could hear the shortness of breath in his words, and despite the terror that had suddenly started to roil in the pit of her stomach, she knew there was no way he was going to get them out of this. She grabbed his shoulder and yanked him out of his seat before he could buckle up. "They're old friends," she said, ignoring his yelp of protest and collapsing into his place. She felt the thrum beneath her fingers reaching deep into her bones as she started the engine. Her hands fumbled over the controls, almost as awkward as Charlie had been, all sweaty and trembling. Was this the first time since the war? Since the crash that had put her on this path? She suddenly felt like she was once again in the ATA pool of trainee pilots in Hamble Airfield, back on the green, green grass of England. Just a rookie recruit, all fresh-eyed and eager to do her part for the war effort, before being confronted with the flying bus that was the twin-seater Magister and wondering if she was about to get herself killed. More bullets bounced across the cockpit. Life was a ridiculous circle, she decided. You're a pilot? Charlie cried as she pushed them away from the dock. I am. But you're a woman. She gave him a death stare. I just mean, on the way over, you were all fidgety and nervous and stuff, Miss Moxley. I thought you'd hired me by mistake, seeing as you seemed more scared of flying than anybody I ever knew. Figured the jacket was just for show. Maybe the latest fashion on Fifth Avenue or whatever. A glance out of the window and she saw the group of men gaining fast. 6 or 7 of them, all in suits. More bursts of light flashed from the muzzles of their guns. Only a matter of time before they hit something useful. Miss? Her fingers gripped the throttle and lurched them forward. It's Captain Moxley, Charlie, she snapped, swallowing her fear as best she could. And I don't mind flying. It's the crashing that upsets me. She fixed him with a look. Now, strap the hell in. We're leaving. The small cargo ship bobbed uneasily as it made its way through the bay. The grandeur of New York City to its right, the Statue of Liberty lit up with gunfire to its left. Standing quietly on the deck, a shadowy figure watched events unfold. Agent Taylor's fedora dipped ever so slightly in resignation as the seaplane they were trying to apprehend finally bounced off the waters and clung desperately to the sky. Away from the bullets, into the safety of the night. She's made this far harder than it needs to be, he thought with some irritation. As usual. He raised his hand and beckoned the two hulking, fiercely unnatural figures nearby. They stomped forward, each with a pair of guns in their clawed hands, while enormous leathery wings unfolded in readiness like bats preparing for their evening meal. As they reached him, their misted chrome and glass helmets inclined his way, revealing the spiderwebs of hoses connected to tanks at their backs, a potent mix of gases that kept them alive in this realm's atmosphere. Looking up at them, he hesitated for a moment, wondering if using these specialist tools might be overkill. But his concern didn't last long. Overkill was the only thing that had ever worked with Samantha Moxley. "We can't allow the captain to beat us to the prize tonight," he said loudly, once again feeling a deep sense of regret about setting foot on that beach in Normandy all those years ago. He pointed to the speeding light in the night sky. "Bring her down." Chapter 2. Sky Fight. Sam's fingers gripped the cold, shuddering metal of the yoke as they pulled away from the water and the gunfire. The plane bucked and fought, but she'd danced with worse partners in her life. That Spanish prince in Nantes, for one, during a particularly traumatic undercover mission the year after the war ended. And, of course, more recently there had been Taylor. Is he down there now, orchestrating events from a safe distance? As usual. She watched the fine water spray streak across the cockpit window as they pushed through the skies above the bay. The idea that he was behind this made her shiver, but not as much as the terrifying thought of what his men would do to her sister if she didn't beat them to her. If there was one thing about Agent Jack Taylor that could be relied upon, it was that he always kept himself out of harm's way. Yet he had no qualms about instructing others to get their hands bloody. He had ordered her to enough times over the last few years, that was for damn sure. A crack, like localized lightning, sounded just outside the window. A familiar noise, muffled by the engines, but loud enough to make both occupants jump and Sam's heart sink. A bullet. It shouldn't have been possible. They were too high, too far from the men they'd left behind. Yet it was what it was. Sam immediately tensed in her seat, her eyes scanning the dark night outside, watching for whatever she could feel approaching. But it was Charlie who saw it first. The tight angles of his jawline immediately slackened as he stared out of his window in horror. "Oh, God!" She twisted around, but couldn't see past him. "What? That's not possible." Another gunshot, another crack against the plane. Then a whistling sound as air rushed out through a brand new hole in the fuselage behind them. Sam wrestled with the aircraft as it shuddered violently. "Be more specific, please," she urged. The young pilot's gaze slowly returned to the neon-lit cityscape before them. His face was as bone-white as the moon rising above Lower Manhattan. "I think we're in trouble, Miss Moxley." Her knuckles tightened on the yoke as she glanced sideways. "I told you, it's Cap..." Then she saw the giant winged figure behind him, careering through the sky towards the plane. "Holy Christ!" she gasped, yanking back hard on the stick, as whatever it was, a man, a dragon, raised his guns and fired again. The bullets screamed past as the plane groaned and fought against her reckless flying. To her relief, it did what it was told, just enough to get them out of trouble in that instant. Yet the flash of wings that suddenly shot past on the other side of the plane told her that she probably wasn't going to be able to keep this up. Not if there were two of those things out there. She spun the plane left and right as the creatures weaved around her, wings beating and folding, skimming the currents with ease. Cats toying with a cornered mouse. Whatever they were, and whatever nightmare Agent Taylor might have recruited them from, didn't matter right now. The immediate problem was they were able to maneuver far more skillfully than this heavy bird, even with her at the controls, and she'd been known to make broken Spitfires dance. The nine had truly outdone themselves this time. She'd been party to...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?